Welcome to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall, a discussion of blockchain technology, cryptocurrency, and why it matters to you.
Hey folks, welcome into the show. You're listening to Beyond the Blockchain. I'm your host, Scott Tindall, here with you live every Wednesday night, like we are on 106.5 FM Talk. Thanks for joining us today. I'm actually back in studio this week, so I'm not on the phone, but nevertheless, I have the good pleasure of being with the illustrious Johnny Gwynn and the ever-capable Philip here on the board. Thank you
very much. You're welcome.
And it's nice to hear you in full bassy FM voice and not tinny through a phone right. treble yeah. as of last week. So,
well, I'm glad to be back.
Yeah.
I always have a lot of fun, and I have more fun when we all get to do it together. So that makes me happy. All right, let's talk about the big stuff going on in the world
sure.
today, Johnny. What is the big happening going on that people need to know about to get us started? I know we love to start with the news, so let's just go with the big kind of what's going on.
Well, I don't have a huge news story, but we talked about PayPal last week. There's PayPal last week and how they were offering kind of an FDIC insurance on Bitcoin,
okay,
cryptocurrency. Well, they are now exposing and showing their balance sheet of how much Bitcoin they actually have.
How much do they have?
1 billion in crypto on the balance sheet.
That's with a B?
That's with a B. And so, again, PayPal is our grandparents use it. So it's right. well much, you know, we love on this show to talk about you know, crypto and blockchain and innovation in daily life. Well, PayPal is a daily life thing. It's not super weird, but this is showing the world that cryptocurrency and transactions, the transaction side, not the holding side of cryptocurrency, is very much a mainstream thing now.
I mean, if you look at it, my mother is in her 70s and she learned how to Venmo,
yeah.
PayPal.
It's actually easier than most.
So yeah. if given the same opportunity and it was as easy as PayPal through the app, I think you're going to see a huge increase in adoption. And probably this PayPal thing, you can tell me more about it, but I imagine eventually we're going to have a drop down that says, how would you like this transaction
Correct.
To be completed?
So PayPal recently launched, by the way, So this is on the coattails of this launch, that now their checkout service will allow merchants to accept Bitcoin, Ethereum, Bitcoin Cash, and Litecoin. So again, mass adoption and mass platforms that are not, you know, some strange small Web3 project, right, on Tron, on some different platform. This is a very big platform that's making merchants. By the way, that's nothing new. I know a representative in 2012 was a mobile representative for BitPay out of Atlanta.
Yeah.
They were trying to get merchants to, you know, use Bitcoin on an app even in 2012. So,
just,
again, everybody was scared of it. Very early on.
Well, that's really interesting. And I think that's going to grow substantially. And what it really makes me think about also is reducing the transfer fees. If you're already moving money into crypto,
Correct.
Just accepting a payment into crypto is so much easier.
So there's a very big shipping company in this town, right? And I won't go to the name, but you know it. And that same BitPay representative got a meeting with the international shipping person mm-hmm. that was talking about the docking fees. And you're talking millions of dollars in wire transfers for docking fees. He showed them if you can get a handful of ports to accept Bitcoin, how it would cut these millions of dollars into like 10 grand a year.
Yeah, dozens of dollars.
Yeah, it was unbelievable what these fees were.
Right.
But again, it was just too early for the game, but mm-hmm. that is so. But so that story number one, PayPal is now showing their ledger and then also the launch of their merchant paying with different cryptocurrency. The other thing I want to talk about is we read a lot. You know, we have to read a lot for this
we
show.
Do. Yeah.
There is a great resource for everybody, Coindesk.com.
Right.
Just happy birthday to them. May 4th is their 10th year. But they did I'll read very quickly. I know we're getting to the break here. I will read very quickly their 10 most memorable crypto moments since they have started.
Excellent. Let's go through the 10, and we can talk about them when we come back from the break.
So number one, the Mt. Gox collapse of 2014.
Of course.
The Dow hack of 2016. These all sound like wars.
I know, right?
The FTX meltdown of 2022. Number four, the launch of Ethereum in 2015. Five, the block wars of 2017.
There you go.
Six, the initial coin offering boom of 2018. Number seven, the emergence of Facebook's Libra in 2000. I had to read about that one.
Yeah, I remember that one.
And I'll tell you, we'll talk about that when we get back, if you don't mind, because I'll tell you why that's important. The rise of crypto memes in 2020. And nine, the one we talk about a lot, El Salvador's adoption of Bitcoin as legal tender in 2021. Really, the big thing, the big story was money, power, and the human struggle for creativity and independence.
Well, I think that needs to be number one.
It really is.
All right, folks. Well, that's a good top 10 list. When we come back from the break, we got some fun news for you. I think you're going to be excited, and I think this news is going to make everything about the show better.
Sweet.
When we come back on Beyond the Blockchain.
Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain. I'm your host, Scott Tindall. We had a good first segment talking about the news. We talked about the top 10, at least CoinDesk top 10 stories in the history of crypto.
Ten years of CoinDesk, that's what it was. 10 years of CoinDesk, but think 10 years in crypto is like 1,000 years in history.
Right.
It changes so fast. And I mean,
I was thinking about
that. They were there in the earliest days of the Satoshi white paper, 2 years out.
I mean, that's pretty remarkable.
Yeah,
and to be able to stick around, I'm sure there's been a ton come and go along the way that couldn't stick it out. Before we stopped, we went through the top 10, and then we talked about Facebook Libra briefly.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to catch people's attention, as in they remember hearing something about Facebook doing some kind of cryptocurrency.
Or they wanted to.
But
correct.
How did that go down? I can't recall all the details.
So Zuckerberg, this is 2019. Facebook, the earnings were crazy. They were earning real money. They had some real power. Facebook had the juice. I mean, really did. And they were talking about the idea of being bigger than what they were. And most, if you ever watch Silicon Valley, the HBO show, they all get into cryptocurrency to fund their projects.
Well,
cryptocurrency was something always on the card. And what happened was, the reason why it was a bigger story, because I remember it just failing, just, flaming out. Well, what it was, is why it was such a big story to CoinDesk, was it was the first time politicians and money brokers realized real players are dealing with this digital money and they're messing with the money. And that was the first time they got scared.
That makes sense.
And that is why it was a big story, meaning you've had this person that wasn't a small innovator in Web3, working on some small platform with this as a project, as a white paper. This was a major world corporation with a lot of influence, saying the minute we do this, we could literally have our own currency.
And I'm sure for most of these politicians who aren't up to date on emerging technologies, it may have been the first time they really had any understanding of what digital currency could even do at this point.
You are correct, sir.
History. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, Johnny, one of the things that makes me excited when we get to talk about all these wonderful projects and the cool stuff and how much fun they are is we have a lot of fun together on the show.
We do. I love it. I love the invitation.
Do you think we should do this more regularly together?
I'm up for it.
You think so?
Sure.
What do you think, Philip?
Absolutely.
I think it'd be fantastic.
Yes.
So the good news is
I feel like I'm being asked out on a date by two men.
No.
Nothing wrong with that.
I mean, it's not the first time that's happened. Certainly not in this studio either. Anyway, Johnny, so we should do it more often.
Okay.
All right. So how about we tell the listeners what we have in mind?
Well, you tell them. It's your story.
All right. It's my story, but I want you to tell them the details. So this show is so much more fun when Johnny's a part of it, that we want the show to be Beyond the Blockchain with Scott and Johnny.
Oh, look at that.
How about that? Yes. That'll give us a lot more entertainment.
Now you're going to hit me up to fix the logo, aren't you?
I'm not talking to you about
that. I'm kidding. No, that's great. I think it's a great idea. We've
been knocking it around.
And we talk about this stuff with or without a radio show.
I mean, we're already talking about it.
So, right.
If we weren't here in the studio, we'd be texting each other about this right now.
I get the 3 o'clock text, which nothing other than just a tweet, a direct message of it. I'm like, I know exactly what it is. Like the one today was the U.S. government drops like 200,000 Bitcoin on the market. Right. You know, but that's, I don't need it. Scott doesn't need to say anything else. It's just, duh, here you go.
You're like one of my friends. I know I can send this link and you'll go, oh, I get it.
Yes.
And no commentary necessary.
Well, and I think it's great. I appreciate you. Look, I own a recording studio, a podcast studio, and I never get to use the microphone. So to me, this is like heaven on earth.
We like you on this side of the mic.
And also no editing, which is, you know, is the work. It's the yoke.
That is the work.
The yoke of the podcaster is the editing.
Well, Johnny, I mean, one of the things we want to do is kind of enhance the show and make it more interactive and more fun. What do you think is some good ways we can do that?
Number one, I want to talk to the 106.5 geniuses here and figure out how to bring in my two-camera studio so we could do live, maybe possibly on Facebook page or whatever like that. The other thing, too, is I would really like to incorporate listener calls more and maybe tweets and questions from people who listen to us.
I think that's fantastic.
Like even create a segment. Like I don't know if it's every show, but do the best we can to create that. And the other thing is I want us, I have a co-working space called Container Yard downtown. It's an awesome space to work and network and hang out. And I'd love us to do a Beyond the Blockchain meetup and some big blockchain live events down there.
I think that sounds fantastic. Yeah. We've knocked this stuff around. And the idea of being able to build more of a community, we both interact with people all the time that are asking these questions. And I've just interacted with so many friends and even strangers that are interested in learning more and connecting with other people who are interested in the things we talk about, whether that's crypto or AI, machine learning,
one of my oldest friends' aliens. Sons works for a Bitcoin company out of Nashville. He's actually in China, right? I mean, Japan right now with this company. And the kids from Mobile and working in the space pretty high. And he always talked about he doesn't have a place to go and have his speakers come talk because he can't find the kind of meeting areas in these groups. So I would love this show to be the kind of linchpin for people looking at this type of innovation and this type of technology.
I think that's fun. I think we have a really cool opportunity to your point, to also bring in some folks that people could really learn from. And
definitely,
we can all learn together. I mean, you and I happen to just be willing to talk about it on air and everywhere else.
I love gadgets, and these are ultimate gadgets.
Yeah, but other people know a lot more than we do, and if we can learn from them, that'd be terrific. With that in mind, Johnny, learning from somebody on the back half of the show.
Sweet.
We're going to have Emily Hart from Motion Mobs.
You speak highly of those ladies from Motion Mobs.
They're just remarkable. Really big brains, geniuses, always on the cutting edge of what's going on. And I spent some time with them in Birmingham while I was up there last week. And I think we have some stuff we can learn from. Motion Mobs is quickly becoming kind of the go-to resource for AI discussions, not just in Alabama, but throughout the South as well. Because they're just so well-respected and so knowledgeable. So I think there's going to be a really good segment on the back half of the show.
Sweet.
All right, Johnny, let's go back to...
Okay.
Now that we've told everybody how much fun we're going to have going forward, let's talk about this thing that's going on with meme coins.
Oh, meme coins.
Let's explain real quick a meme coin,
because I actually did have someone listen to the show that says, sometimes you think that words are well-known in the lexicon of crypto are not really known to the listener. So
that's a good point.
A meme coin is the best way to put it is it's a cryptocurrency that is based on a tweet or a meme. Literally, it's not backed by anything other than like a brand, correct? And it could be many things.
It's like Doge.
Garlic coins, Doge coin, all those things. But one recently was based on this thing called Pepe the Frog.
That's a weird one.
It is a weird one.
Is this a 4chan thing?
It's moved off into the artist who, by the way, this was stolen from. He never, and again, I go back and I don't even know the meaning of the frog anymore.
I
asked a young person in college what he thought it meant, and he told me one thing, and I went and looked it up on knowyourmeme.com, And it was the exact opposite. So it's kind of weird who's taken on this. It has something to do with Trump and, I don't know, white supremacy or something. I don't know.
I think it's been around a lot longer than Trump, hasn't it?
Well, it's been around, but it become very much known until they put that red hat on it. They put the Make America hat on, okay?
Okay.
So here's the thing, though. This coin goes up a week ago, right? Obscure meme inspired cryptocurrency.
By goes up, you mean released.
Released. Pepe coin is released into the market. And an unexpected surge, okay, of
is
this.
Is it unexpected?
Well, again, certain ones. Look, 1,000 get released a day, only one or two. I will tell you for sure what a meme what will happen when a meme coin goes parabolic. I can tell you what for sure will happen.
Somebody's getting stuck holding a bag?
No. I will miss it. I will miss the profit. I have missed everyone.
You will get stuck holding a bag.
When I dumped money into Shinu Ibu, it was the day that Buteletic, or whatever his name is, dumped a billion Shinu Ibu on the market the very hour I bought into.
So we need the inverse Johnny coin.
Again, do the exact opposite of me. Not that this is financial advice, but do the exact opposite of me. So here's the thing. So Pepe coin went up, and it went up at 0.0003. Okay?
So and it 0.003 of a penny.
And it went to 90 cents.
No kidding.
In just a few months, yeah. And so here's the thing. The story that I'm reading it from, Coindesk.com, a single person had a bewildering rise, turned a $250 investment into almost a 5,000,000% coin profit. So he went to $4.9 million.
Is that got to be one of the largest kind of like not recorded, but you know what I mean? Well known scores in one week.
It's
one month.
Anonymous, okay? But again,
but you can trace it on the chain to know.
Yeah, you could. That it's real. The anonymous founders, of course, the founders have made tons of money. But you know, and so while that's a big story, right? The Pepe coin. So that's. That came out May 9th at 4 p.m.
Okay.
Let me give you May 10th at 6 a.m.
Oh, boy.
Pepe pump and dump.
That's what we expect.
From 1.8 billion market cap to 800 million in 4 days. Hype over. That's how fast the dump
That's how happened. Good the rug pulls look when you the have rug them planned.
Pull. And I will tell you, I've been a part of 3 massive rug pulls, and I lost money on Pepe coin because I don't put money in meme coins because I have a discrimination against meme coins, and it's actually made me not actually profit, you know, because I'm okay with
missing those. But I would
like to have $2 million.
I also would like to have $2 million, but I am okay with missing a meme coin because if you're not listen, if you don't already know when the rug's coming out, you're the sucker.
Well, again,
if you're not part of the group that knows when the rug's going, you're the sucker.
Again, that's like playing poker against professional poker players at a table. Yeah. If you don't know the person at the table, then you are the mark.
You're the mark. Yeah.
You're the mark. And I, of course, I'm the mark. I'm not even a guppy swimming with sharks. I mean, I'm amoeba in this world. But it's one of those things, too, I would say. I guess the bigger question is, look what you're putting money into.
Mm-hmm.
Research. Make sure it's something that you like. You know, look, some things are making money. I get it. If you know something, an inside track, take it. But also, I've wasted a lot more. I've wasted $200 on a lot more stupid stuff than a meme coin.
Oh, for sure.
$200. I mean, my goodness.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, wow, that's just a remarkable turn from 250 or whatever it is to 5 million.
Well, the thing was, and people were aping in, you know, after it was rising, and I kept saying I missed the boat, and people made a lot of money aping in. And again, I've learned not to do that. I don't chase candles anymore because we should have a whole show on here's all the things Johnny has done that you should never do.
It's like a TLC song, but modern, you know, don't go chasing crypto candles.
Don't go chasing crypto candles. That's a t-shirt. That's a new t-shirt. That is funny. We should take famous songs and turn it into blockchain related sex ideas.
That's
funny. Yeah. Sex ideas is not dirty. It's taking one idea and another idea and marrying them, putting them together. Okay.
Coming up with something new.
Yeah. Yes.
Like the way biology intended it to be, apparently.
So speaking of weird meme coins, by the way, I did look up some of the silliest ones.
Tell me.
One's called the Useless Ethereum Token, and it literally is that. It's a useless Ethereum token. It was created as a joke. It has no real value or use. One is called Coinye.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a cryptocurrency that was created in 2014, which is early in the game there, as a joke based on the popular hip-hop artist Kanye West, Coinye.
I think it was much harder to create a coin back then than it is now, too. So.
Well, I mean, that's some work. I was talking to my wife, Lady Wilborn, today, and Rally is a coin that you can buy on Coinbase. And on Rally, you can create the Scott Tindall coin.
Oh, you told me that.
And the Stacy coin based on the Rally. And it will change and fluctuate based on what you based your coin on. But I think you can set it up in like less than 3 hours.
That's really impressive. Maybe we should do that as a show project.
And again, I think as little as $250 can actually do it. Because all you're doing is staking it. All you're doing is staking it. But you have to set the parameters. You know, you get to set the what would the coin be? What's the coin value based on? And Rally makes a ton of money with Rally coins on artists, like visual artists and music artists and stuff. And the idea, it's based on their sales, so it's actually based on a real thing. It's a real physical thing.
I think Taylor Swift concert ticket sounds like a heck of a Rally.
Record Store Day Taylor Swift vinyl.
Yeah,
I've made a lot of money off Taylor Swift Record Store Day vinyl.
Yes, well, you should. maybe if our listeners have ideas on what we should make our Beyond the Blockchain style coin after, you know, what we should tether
research,
to. That'd be interesting. I'd love to hear their thoughts on that.
Again, it's a cool model. It's called a creator coin, and I think it's a cool idea.
All right. That sounds good, Johnny. When we come back, we're going to talk to Emily Hart from Motion Mobs. We're going to talk AI and all that's new in the AI world. When we come back on Beyond the Blockchain.
Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall.
Hey, folks. Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain. I'm your host, Scott Tindall, here with the Johnny Gwynn and Philip. And Johnny, we talked in the first half of the show about wanting to surround ourselves with people that know more than we do about certain items.
Amen.
Here's our chance.
Sweet.
All right. So joining us on the show is going to be Emily Hart from Motion Mobs. We talked a lot about Motion Mobs. They've actually been in studio and we've had a lot of fun talking AI, machine learning, the different stuff going on in the world. Well, the cool things about what these just really genius level women at Motion Mobs are doing is they are out there on the cusp of knowing what all the new AI products are and quickly becoming kind of the go-to source for corporations to get new information about AI. That's a lot of knowledge that we can learn from.
And I'm sure they're getting overwhelmed with questions right now.
I think they probably get a lot of questions. Emily, are you getting a lot of questions these days?
I am. It's funny. Even when I sit down to, you know, grab a drink with somebody, they've got questions about AI, even if that's not why we got together.
I think everybody wants to know. Johnny, you have a theory on what you think everybody wants to know, right?
Kind of.
Like, you want to know, like,
when is Skynet live and when are the robots taking over?
Is that, Emily, is that a question you get most often?
You know, if I could answer that question, I would be much richer than I actually am right now. So, unfortunately, I don't have the answer for you.
Well, you'll be one of the first to know. So, we're lucky that, you know, we'll get some heads up before that happens, I hope. Emily, y'all are based up there in Birmingham, and I know that you end up having a lot of really cool conversations with interesting people that are outside of our market. But tell me a little bit about kind of how corporations are looking at AI now and what corporations should be looking at.
Absolutely. Scott, it's a really interesting time for AI. I want to encourage you and all of your listeners to think back several years ago to when IBM Watson first hit the scene. It got a ton of press coverage. Everybody got all excited about it. And if you think about what have we talked about recently, nobody's writing about IBM Watson anymore. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that it actually failed as a product. It has just become so ingrained in so many of the services that we work with that we kind of forget that it's there. Mm. And now we're seeing this huge influx in conversation around what got started from ChatGPT, OpenAI, and all of their AI models. The thing that I get the most questions about, because it's just really confusing to the non-technical person, is trying to understand what's the difference between ChatGPT, and I put that in air quotes, versus artificial intelligence. Mm. And I spend a lot of my time explaining that ChatGPT is really a productized version of artificial intelligence. It actually gives us, the layperson, an interface that we can go to via a website, we can interact with, we can ask it questions, and it responds to us. You don't have to be a developer in order to interact with ChatGPT. But at the end of the day, because ChatGPT is productized, none of these corporations that we're talking to are actually looking at putting the official ChatGPT, insert air quotes again, into any of their products. What we're having those conversations about is applying the GPT level of natural language processing to other functions, other automations. I think one of the most encouraging things that I've heard throughout these conversations is that the corporate leaders are really thinking strategically about, oh, I understand that these processes are tedious, we're wasting time on them. These are things that could be done by AI. So as much as we may be scared of Skynet, I do think that the introduction of ChatGPT to the layperson's world has made it much easier for people to start understanding, oh, I could have this cute little assistant that sits on my computer screen and I can ask it questions all day long and it just feeds those answers back to me. So it's been exciting to hear many of these organizations start really sinking their teeth into what processes do we waste time on throughout the year that could be done more effectively and with more precision if we gave that task to a computer instead.
So it sounds like you're telling me that, and I'm a movie nerd, so, you know, and I love Marvel. So you're telling me that it's not very far off and I can have my own Jarvis. Like Iron Man does?
Or Star Trek computer?
Yes, absolutely. Everybody's getting a Jarvis coming soon.
Everybody's getting a Jarvis. We're going to hold you to that.
That's maybe not true.
That's maybe not true.
What I think is interesting, too, is looking at ChatGPT in the way that Emily explained it, as the idea of it's almost like instead of DOS on the computer, which was very difficult to use as a computer, the minute you went to a GUI system, a Windows or like a Mac system, it was easier for everyone to use it. I know it's not an exact thing of how it worked, but that idea of that interface is what changes everything because it makes it, it's a product at that point, yeah.
That analogy makes sense to me. Emily, is that a fair analogy, you think?
I think that's a fair analogy, and I'm a huge fan of analogies. One of the things that I love about this productized version of AI is just that it pretty much unlocks everybody's brain to what could be. I really strongly feel like the technology world is on the precipice of a renaissance that may be like when we first started adopting mobile technology.
Right.
There's still a ton of questions around how does it best serve my company versus what's just cool and what do I need to take seriously? What's just a fad? So at Motion Mobs, we've been spending a lot of our time working on educating both the general public and these individual companies that we're meeting with and having these conversations about AI, because I really do think that our world is going to change. AI is not going away. And so we have to figure out how to make it work for us so that we don't spend the next decade trying to play catch up.
That's a really great point. And from a team that's been there since the beginning of mobile development, that's how Motion Mobs built themselves. It's interesting to see, and people will respect the fact that y'all are bringing this this information.
Emily, I have a question. In these meetings you're having with the corporate America, right? What AI tasks are they specifically asking about that, you know, that these tools are doing that they know they can incorporate into their processes?
Great question. We've heard a variation of ideas. Some of them are looking at using a AI model to produce kind of some like base level computer programming code.
Yeah.
So being able to automate some of those processes that just are taking up too much time. I'm specifically hearing about it in being able to produce code in languages that new developers are no longer learning. Mm. And so that job pool is shrinking. If nobody's learning that language, how do you get somebody to continue writing it? Mm-hmm. You have to train a computer to do it.
We're also seeing
a lot of analysis of really giant pieces of data, which realistically is what AI is best at doing. But it's looking at, think like government level data, where right. you've got these huge data sets, results, and pieces of information that come back from studies and stuff like that. And being able to feed all of that information into an AI model and say, summarize this for me. Mm-hmm. Tell me how I can plot out this kind of information to make it easily digestible.
Yeah, I remember reading, I think it was NASA talking about Benjamin's law of big numbers and the idea of we can't do reports because it takes so long for the analysis for us to use the information. I guess now you're saying right. this task can be done in a human in a time where we can actually use this information properly.
Exactly. You let the computer analyze it, tell you what's worth your mm-hmm. attention, and then you can ignore everything else.
Wow, cool.
I think that's really interesting. I think that, to your point, we're on the precipice of something tremendous. If people don't start paying attention to AI and machine learning now, I think they're going to regret it. I saw something today.
I was told not to ignore the internet, in the 90s. And look how foolish that sounds.
Well, good thing you didn't ignore the internet, Johnny.
No, that wasn't me. I didn't say it. I was in the room and I heard it.
Well, let that be a lesson for all of us. Emily, thank you for joining us today. I think we learned a lot in just a short period of time. But certainly, we have to do this again. And maybe next time we can do it in studio, next time y'all are down here. And, Johnny and I are going to be doing a kind of a Beyond the Blockchain meetup, get together. And maybe y'all could join us for that. That might be a lot of fun.
Would love to be there. Thank you so much for inviting me tonight.
All right. Well, it's been a great time, Emily. Thanks for joining us. And, Johnny, we've got just a very small bit of time. Then we're going to take a break. But when we come back from the break, we haven't done it tonight, and you know where I'm going.
We're
going beyond the chain.
Okay.
And I want to talk about cabals.
Okay. I'm good.
C-A-B-A-L, for those of us who I just recently learned.
Good. I can bring it back around to what I think is a technical cabal with Mr. OpenAI himself.
Oh, the Sam Altman.
Correct.
Emily just talked a lot about OpenAI.
That's right.
Is there a cabal here?
He has a weird product I want to talk about.
Well, we'll talk about it when we come back on Beyond the Blockchain.
Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall.
Hey, folks. Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain. Jeez, that big noise you just heard was me banging my knee against the table here. Sorry for the gong show. Anyway, Johnny, you're here with us having fun. We're talking blockchain, cryptocurrency, AI. But now, the last 10 minutes of the show, we got to go beyond the blockchain to talk about things we like to talk about, which are just really interesting things that make us wonder how the world works. And today, I want to talk about cabals.
All right, explain, give your definition of a cabal.
A cabal, let me just tell you what Merriam-Webster says, because he's the expert, right? All right, so just so everybody knows, let's see here. Mr.'s Merriam and Webster from quite a long while ago, they say that a cabal is a group of persons secretly united in a plot of contrived schemes.
Sounds like government.
Yeah, it does sound like government. A group engaged in such schemes.
Yeah.
So a cabal is, it's also different than a cartel.
Oh, no, because that's
cartel
correct.
Is totally different. Yeah. I don't want people to get confused. Cabal is secret. Right. You don't want people to know you're in a cabal.
Right, a mystic society.
If it's a known entity, you're not cabaling.
Right. You're not Cabalin. I'm Cabalin.
T-shirt.
You're Cabalin.
We're Cabalin.
Well, and you know, in the world of finance, for thousands of years, you know, there is the Illuminati secret cabal that, you know,
of course
moves
is.
All the weights and the stones to move in their favor. So there will never be a time without a cabal, either beneficial or malignant.
Hmm. That's a good point. I guess they could be both beneficial and malignant. We normally think of them as being seedy, shady, manipulative.
The ultimate cabal, in my opinion, is like a spy organization. Like, just take MI6 or CIA. They operate in a different morality than we do. They don't look at things as good as bad, good or bad. They look at it as wins and losses. So the idea of a cabal to some people, based on their morality, is not the idea of ethics or morality. It's the idea of wins or losses. So again, it's a different way of operating. It's a different way of thinking. It's for a sociopath. It's for a true sociopath or a true believer.
Yeah, that's a good point. Tell me about your favorite cabal.
The Rosicrucians.
Is this like some Dan Brown stuff?
This is some real Dan Brown stuff.
All right, take me down the road.
So the Rosicrucians are 17th century philosophers and thinkers, right?
Okay.
And they believed it's rooted in medieval Christian and Islamic tradition. So there is this very much, again, go look at the Abbot shrines, go look at the Masonic orders. Those are the outward faces of many secret dark underground cabals. The Rosicrucians would have been on the order inside the order inside the order.
Ooh.
So you'd have to have been, you know, exclusive into this group. And some of the famous Rosicrucians are Sir Francis Bacon, Sir Isaac Newton, Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, and Mozart. So physicians, mathematicians, but do you remember the Georgia Guidestones that was like America's?
I do. It's America's... Stonehenge,
right? Yeah. But it was made by an anonymous person.
Well, somebody damaged that recently.
No, they're gone. They've been blown up. Literally have been blown up.
Yeah.
It is rumored that the Neo-Rosicrucian order is who paid for that.
Paid for it to be made to be removed?
Made in the 70s, yes. And the whole thing is about population control, by the way. A lot of it's about that's what the Georgia Guidestones was. There's 10 rules on it. It's the idea of like what language to speak and like how many people should be on the planet. By the way, 500 million was so extreme population control.
Wow.
But it was this, you know, like 7 or 8 rules of the New World. But so do you have a favorite cabal yourself?
You know, I've got a couple of good candidates I'm working on right now. Maybe I'll talk about it later.
But I'm watching.
I've got my eye on for sure. But maybe two.
The apple of your eye.
I got two cabals I'm keeping my eyes on right now.
Modern day or historic?
No, in life today.
Yeah, I got you. Well, supposedly all these
the world.
Supposedly all these things are still operating. Again, that's the whole thing about the Illuminati. Like, it just keeps moving and growing from its inception in the 17th century.
I think the interesting thing about cabals is they could be worldwide. Or they could be as small as one community.
Sure.
But it doesn't change the fact that they're operating in the same capacity.
Correct. And again, the idea is also the very nature of a cabal, right?
Mm-hmm.
That something sinister, something done underneath is also done out in the open. And that's the idea of government to me.
Oh, wow.
So the idea of like the same things are used, manipulation, coercion, manipulation of currency, misinformation, propaganda, all those things that are done by the same organizations that we kind of like frown upon are done in the open. And we allow look, I'm not judging anything. I mean, just government in its very nature is an oppressive anatomy in the state. It's a malignant thing. It can start out very beneficial, but it's going to end up doing some of the horriblest things your enemies do.
Yeah,
because they have to keep up.
And then add in politics and elected officials into that, right? And you've got to get elected and you've got to stay elected.
Well, it's the idea of, look, take a lobby, right? A lobby is a paid cabal that goes in and meets with individual legislators, right? Mm-hmm. To be able to create something with the idea of down the road to be a bigger vote. So it always starts with a cabal. Everything starts with a cabal. Mm-hmm. Correct? Right?
I think
so. Motivated either by greed, by money, or by power. Something starts with a small amount of people to put something in motion.
Yeah, I saw something the other day on one of the social, I don't know, somewhere on the internet, said people make decisions based on 4 things, and the way to think about it is the word rice.
Okay.
So people will make a decision They will do something based on four things. One is rewards.
R, rewards.
The I is ideology.
Sure.
Okay. The C is collusion and coercion.
Correct.
So, like, you're doing it, you're only doing it because everybody's doing it with you, or you're doing it so somebody's got a gun to your head.
Yep.
And the E is ego.
Correct.
And so those are the four ways. So when I start thinking about things now and I use that, I start to think, all right, is this person making a decision based on rewards, ideology, collusion, or coercion? And
which is a very intentional way to have interactions with people, because at that point you're understanding it from their point of view, and also a way that you can connect with them or be able to work around their issue if you can nail that down.
Yeah, if you can identify which of the four they're doing.
I mean, you can start with yourself of, like, you can train yourself by asking what motivates me by a decision that I'm making, because you can actually know the answer probably. But if you get good at that, eventually you'll see it in other people, and that's what makes you, like, the people who can read a room, people can cold read somebody.
Right.
That is the thing that blows me away. I would love to have that talent of the fake, the person who can see the dead, right?
Mm-hmm.
They cold read people, and it's unbelievable. They watch these micro movements in their eyes and the way they lead them with questions. That is talk about a Marvel superpower.
It's a superpower.
And people do it all the time, man. These cold readers, it blows me away. I almost want to read a book just to learn, you know, tactics of the cold reader.
Well, this is not cold reading, but one of the things that's really interesting is a guy named Chris Voss. He's a former FBI hostage negotiator.
Mm-hmm.
He's got some really interesting stuff about reading people and talking to people and convincing them how to do the things that you need them to do, like release hostages, right, without killing anyone.
That's that thing I told you about, was the guy that was teaching nerd guys how to, you know, score with the ladies
in
the bars,
right,
with the micro agreements.
Right.
I think it's called The Game.
I've heard of it.
The Game, the book The Game, which, by the way, if you're a father and have a daughter, you need to go get this book right now and teach your daughter what these things about called micro agreements and how these goofy men manipulate these women into doing things they do not want to do. And it's all through this psychology of the micro agreement.
Well, that seems like a good way to end the show, Johnny.
Are we into the show?
We're into the show. I know it seems like it's only been a few minutes.
I never got to talk about Altman and his WorldCoin.
All right.
Next week.
Next week.
Yeah.
Or maybe we'll do an after show sometime. Maybe we'll do just like a phone call or something.
I love it.
We'll think about it. All right, folks. We'll see you next week. We'll talk about Sam Altman for sure, one way or the other, when we see you next week on Beyond the Blockchain.